Welcome to the Tennis IQ podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And today, Josh and I are going to talk about the topic of discipline and maintaining discipline and why at times we as tennis players may lose discipline, especially around some of the mental and emotional habits that we have been engaging in. And this is I think it's a frequent issue that I see with players, Josh, is that, you know, we'll work with somebody for a period of time, they'll experience some success, and then it's as if they kind of go back a little bit. There's a little bit of regression. And I was, you know, not that this topic isn't on my mind frequently, because we don't want that to happen, but it was brought a little bit more to my attention through a book that I've recently finished listening to, which is called The Tools by Phil Stutz and Barry Michaels. Now, some of you may recognize the name Phil Stutz from a Netflix documentary that Jonah Hill produced called Stutz. And so Phil Stutz is a psychotherapist who lives in Los Angeles, I think originally from New York, and has a very successful practice and has been a little bit different in terms of how psychotherapy or psychotherapists have worked in the past, not always making patients go deep into their childhood and so forth. And he really wanted to figure out ways of helping clients right now with what they're doing. And hence this idea of tools, which are you could even call strategies or techniques. But in the book is about five different tools that we can use in life. And the last tool is about this topic. It's about how the use of tools or strategies or techniques will very likely drop off, and for various reasons. And so they bring this up as a way of trying to get you to think about tools differently in your life so that they are not just quick fixes, but that they actually become more part of who you are and what you do. So before we get into any specific things, Josh, with how to deal with this or what are the issues, you know, I just want to get your initial thoughts on the topic of discipline, maintaining discipline, and, you know, clients maybe losing discipline and how you've seen that play out.
Yeah, I think it is a definitely a natural process. I think we see this really across fields where somebody gets very excited about something and there's that sort of initial improvement and that excitement around that improvement. And it's really because they're, you know, a big part of it is because maybe it's a new paradigm. It's a sort of a paradigm shift for them. It's a new way of thinking, new habits, new behaviors. But then over time, that starts to fade away. It's not as exciting, not as new. They maybe start taking certain aspects of it for granted and maybe revert back to what they've done in the past. And, you know, some of that progress starts to slip, or they start to revert back to, you know, a past level. So I think I've definitely seen it myself, and I think we see it in other areas as well. I think one of the things that feels a little bit different, I think, for something like sports psychology is, you know, and I don't think it should be this way. And I know in terms of the people that I work with, there are a number of people where I work with them on a longer term basis. And, you know, they really have the understanding that just like, you know, technique, just like strength and conditioning, that, you know, when it comes to the mental game, it's not a quick fix. It's not, okay, we're going to work on our core strength, you know, to use a strength and conditioning example, we're going to work on our core strength for the next, you know, short period of time, and then our core is just going to be permanently strong, right? Rather than that, we understand that strength and conditioning is a longer term process. And it's the same thing with mental skills, understanding that, you know, over time, we want to really be building and developing these skills, and that, you know, as we go, there's new things that we can work on. You know, it's not a matter of it being a quick fix. So I think sometimes in sports psychology, and maybe psychology in general, it's viewed that way. It's viewed that, okay, let's talk about these things. Let's maybe learn some of these tools, and then I'll be fixed and not have to worry about it anymore. But that's not the case. It really is a matter of, can we develop these tools, and then, do you understand when you can utilize them? And then I like to think of it as, earlier on in the process, when I work with an athlete, it's more about learning the tools. And there's certainly more learning of the tools that, of different tools that takes place later. But I think earlier on, it's more about that. And then I think a little bit later, it's more about making adjustments and really understanding how you apply some of these tools to your own game and to your own circumstances and to those ups and downs that you go through, right? Maybe certain times where it feels like everything's going well and you're applying those tools, those skills a little bit differently than after an injury, than after a slump, than when things aren't going well. It actually reminds me a little bit of a Zen Buddhist, I don't know if a Zen Buddhist sort of saying that actually just came to mind. That's, not that we necessarily want to relate the mental game to enlightenment, but the phrase is, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. With the idea that, the ways of being that led us to these improvements should not be forgotten about once we get to that point. Once we've gotten more mentally tough, once we are handling these situations in matches and practice better than we had in the past, once we feel like we've made growth, that doesn't mean that we need to just go backwards at that point and forget all about this or stop being conscious and intentional about how we go about our mental processes. But instead, we want to stick with what's working, right? We want to stick with what's working. We want to recognize what's working. I think this also brings me to another point that I'll often talk about with people that's, and I know we've talked about this a lot on this show, that oftentimes people talk about learning from mistakes, learning from when things don't go well. And we certainly want to do that. And I think that's societally, that's maybe more well accepted or more talked about, but we also really want to notice and recognize and think about why, when things do go well, why is that? When you won a match, when you had a breakthrough, if you're a runner and you just had set a PR, okay, let's learn from that experience. What went well? What did you do differently? What did your mindset look like? Your self-talk, your habits, your routines, all of these things. Can we learn from those really positive experiences? So I think, let's recognize and notice, understand why we made these improvements and learn from them and try to build on them rather than thinking that, okay, the job is done.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot there. And if we go back to the sort of the original part of your what you mentioned, Josh, sort of the just sort of fixing things, and I think as a, at least in Western society, we're quite conditioned to look for immediate gratification in that immediate fix. You think of our sort of healthcare system or medical system, it's a lot about take a pill, feel better. And I suppose if we could prescribe stuff like that, Josh, maybe we would do something like that. But this isn't about immediate gratification. It's not about an immediate fix. And I think actually your Zen Buddhist, proverb is quite appropriate. We certainly there is a I feel like when you go through mental training, there is a bit of enlightenment that goes on. It's, you're becoming more enlightened to who you are,
Yeah.
and how you experience the world and how you can do that better. And so I think enlightenment and, for all of us is something to pursue. And your, chop wood, carry water thing also made me think of Ryan Holiday, in his books on stoicism. I can't remember which one, if it was The Obstacle is the Way or Ego is the Enemy, but he talks about how you have to sweep the floor daily. You can't just sweep your kitchen floor once, like your analogy with the abs. You can't just work, do 20 crunches and you're good for the next several years. can't just like sweep the floor of your kitchen once and expect it to be clean. Now it's something that needs to be done every day. You brush your teeth every day. Perhaps you floss every day. These are things that we do every day. Now we may not connect necessarily with why. But those types of things aren't done in, say, the pursuit of a particular issue. They're not necessarily done in the pursuit of a particular life goal, but those things have a general purpose to how we live and perhaps what we're trying to achieve as human beings or even as tennis players. So as we start to get into a little bit more of our, how do we begin to look at these things differently? What can we connect with instead of, fixing an issue or just having a particular goal that I just want to be better at this or I want to win these types of matches. Maybe there's an opportunity to connect it to an overall purpose, something we've talked about a lot in past episodes. So I think that's one thing that, we as humans do have a tendency to look for immediate gratification and fixes. I think the idea that you brought up earlier about sort of the novelty of the new things is something to pay attention to. Because it's almost like you hear a great new song and you listen to it a bunch and you listen to it and then it just sort of begins to lose its effectiveness with you. It doesn't quite get you as pumped up maybe as it used to. And we reach a set point with some of these things and we have to again understand, all right, how do we relate this activity more towards our purpose rather than the novelty of what it is? Can we engage with it still at a deeper level? So I think once people decide to engage with something like mental training, mental performance training, can we look at it more as a skill building paradigm rather than an issue resolution paradigm or the pursuit of a specific outcome goal paradigm? Because it, like we said, it's very normal for people to engage with mental skills, get excited about it, experience success, and then regress back to a set point, right? So that's obviously something that we would not want to do. So in terms of helping players see this more as behavior change and skill development, how do you go about working with players on that, Josh, so that they hopefully don't fall into this trap of getting excited, doing well, and then regressing.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different pieces to it. I think first of all is trying to really recognize or understand where that prog why where what progress has been made and why. And can we bring some awareness to that process as well and have somebody describe in their own words why they feel like they're performing better, why they feel better on the court, why they maybe have a better, deeper understanding of themselves. And I think also, yeah, really, and I think you brought this up a little bit, but having them really trying to connect to their deeper purpose, to their why, why do they play? And that answer will look different for everybody, but what's the reason for playing? What's the reason for pursuing the sport? Why is that? And I think by being clear about that, I think it lessens the chances of that regression taking place of, taking a step backwards once they've made progress because they recognize, hey, I'm doing this for maybe this deeper purpose. It's not just for me trying to win today. It's about me being the best player I can be, or it's about me maximizing my abilities, or it's about me seeing how far I can take the sport, or whatever it is. And I think we've talked about this a lot in the show that, matches are often, people often put a lot of pressure on themselves in matches, and they will often see a match as, okay, everything comes down to this. But rather than seeing a match as sort of a finish line, seeing it as a milestone along that journey, it helps a player understand that, okay, I've made progress and that's great, but how can I continue to raise the bar? How can I continue to take that next step rather than being satisfied and maybe changing what they're doing once they've reached that milestone?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think the purpose piece, while it may be different for everyone, we have also suggested that a larger purpose, if you couldn't figure one out for sure, and when we've discussed the idea of everything is practice, having your purpose simply to become the best player that you can become. So, can we connect with our new skills and habits as a means of creating that? More so than, well, I want to win this tournament or I want to deal with my confidence issue. Certainly, those are part of the process of becoming the best player you can become. So, of course, we'd want to learn to, improve our confidence, our self-belief. And hopefully that begins to translate into better performances, which hopefully translates into some more wins and maybe winning tournaments. But the overall goal is in our lives, in our tennis project, is to just to see how good we can get at this. And the establishment of these habits, whether we call them habits, routines, or even systems in our lives, or a lot of times we'll call, I think we call it by different names, Josh, right? We'll often say, focus on the process, right? So the process is something. I often use recipe as a means of looking at ingredients and instructions. So that's like a system or a set of habits. You might use a formula if you're a little bit more scientifically inclined, right? So finding the right word for you. But that's really the key here is discovering those things, the process, the recipe, the formula, the system, and really investing in the system. And we all have these in our lives. We all have routines for waking up each day. And even within that, there's a small routine, like maybe, how you get dressed. Which do you put one sock on first versus another? Or do you switch it up every day? I know, like me, I always put on my right sock before my left. I don't know why. And I kind of like stick to that, and I never do it the other way. There might be a certain order for your morning wake up routine. So we all have these little systems and processes in place. You brush your teeth, you floss your teeth, and you're doing these things. You don't even know why you're doing them, but you probably brush and floss your teeth to maintain overall health. There's no specific goal that you're trying to achieve with that. There's no necessarily specific issue that you're trying to resolve with that, at least for most of us. And so we want to look at the mental skills training in the same way. Can you connect with trying to become the best version of yourself as a tennis player? And the more that we can connect with that, the more that we can generate some willpower around these habits. Now, that's kind of what Phil Stutz and Barry Michaels really look at as willpower being one of the keys to this. But when you read things like by James Clear on Atomic Habits or BJ Fogg, Tiny Habits, or even Charles Duhigg, The Power of Habit, those are all great books. They're all quite similar in their approach. They might not necessarily go to willpower per se, but more look at the science of behavior change. And one of the things I think that they all really agree upon, Josh, is that idea of somehow rewarding or celebrating what you're doing. And I think this is especially important in the building stage of a new habit. So maybe let's take an example. You brought up a between point routine. So we obviously want to try to use that as much as possible. We know that it's going to help us be more prepared and ready for the next point. It's a great way to focus. And if we are able to do that, we'll perform better in a match, give ourselves a better chance of performing well and winning. What if after a match you reflected back on your use of the routine and celebrate the fact that you did it? Maybe you didn't do it 100% of the time, but you did it sometime. And reflect on how it worked for you. And the more that you can celebrate that fact, and I think this is again more on the tiny habit side of things, or even the book with winning in mind with Lenny Basham is say something like, yeah, that's like me to use my between point routine habit. You don't have to like declare this out loud. You just say that in your mind. Give yourself some credit. Celebrate the fact that you just did something really good so that it reinforces your motivation for doing this type of thing. And soon it will become a habit. I think, you know, the between point routine is one, Josh, that at certain points with players, it might become conditional. Well, I do that when, you know, I'm not, you know, feeling great or I'm stressed or whatever. And obviously, you and I would prefer, especially at the beginning, that they do it all the time. Maybe they get good enough to the point where doing it conditionally could work for them. We can't say that it won't work for everybody. But the more that you start to buy into, now the reason I'm playing so well is because I'm doing it on every point. And this is what I need to buy into. And I have, along the way, celebrated the fact that I've had the discipline to do this. And so I think that's one way to start getting into this is looking more at connecting to the purpose, trying to become the best player we can be, but also the science of behavior change, using rewards and mini celebrations with ourselves to help us install that habit and really connect it again to becoming that great player we want to be, not just to winning a tournament or solving a problem.
Absolutely. Yes, celebrating those small wins is, I think, is really key because it reinforces what we're doing well. And I think so many athletes have the tendency of no focusing on what went wrong, right? They have a great performance, and rather than focusing as a whole on everything that took place, they focus on what they did wrong out there, or they're practicing, they make seven serves in a row and they miss the next one, and that's where their focus is. And they almost start to take it for granted when they do things correctly. So I think having something to, you know, some sort of self-talk, something like that's like me, like what you brought up, Brian, you know, or something like that, where we can recognize you doing something successful. You can recognize those wins, and you know that you know, just like Atomic Habits, just like those other books, that reinforces that same behavior. So I think, you know, that's exactly what we want to do. We want to notice those improvements. We want to recognize it, celebrate them, and then we want to keep pushing, not be satisfied with those improvements and think that the job is finished. You know, understand that it's, you know, it really is a long-term journey and a long-term, you know, mastery really takes place over the long term. It's not a matter of, okay, you know, I've made these improvements, now I'm fixed, right? Now my mental game is fixed. It's more so, okay, we've made improvements, you know, for this level of play, you know, I'm handling that well. You know, I think of a player going from the 10s to the, you know, junior player going from the 10s to the 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s, college, professional, whatever that player's journey is, or you know, a player who's playing in USTA leagues who goes from maybe a 2.5 to a 3.0 to a 3.5 and so on, right? Or maybe they start at a higher level and they continue from there. You know, I think your mental game is serving you at that particular level. But it doesn't necessarily mean that as your game continues to progress, that will continue, you know, working well, you know, once you continue to level up, once you continue to play against better and better people.
Yeah, and you know, before we began recording, Josh, we were talking a little bit about the stages of learning. You know, both of us have read the book Mindset. I actually, you know, I'd love for you to maybe talk about that and relate it back to what we're trying to build here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think and we were talking about this beforehand. I think those stages of learning, and really in the book they break it down into four stages. Which was I think a slightly different way for me to think about this idea. But it starts with unconscious incompetence, right? So, you know, I guess I could mention the four stages and then talk about them a little bit. So unconscious incompetence being stage number one, conscious incompetence being stage number two, conscious competence being stage number three, and unconscious competence being stage number four. So what does that all mean? So really in that first stage, that unconscious incompetence, you aren't performing, at a particularly high level, and you don't know why. You don't understand the reasons for why that is, right? Maybe you're newer to a sport. You don't necessarily, or any sort of activity or performance. You don't necessarily grasp some of the key concepts around it enough to understand why, what's holding you back or what that next level looks like. Where step two, which is conscious incompetence, your skills haven't necessarily caught up to the point where they could be, but now you're more conscious of it. You're more aware as to why that is, which is a key step, and that also makes it a lot easier to continue making progress, to continue, to make that step, because you're aware, you're conscious as to why you're at the level that you're at, and start to understand better, okay, what does it look like to make progress from here? Maybe you started at that 2.5 or below level, and now you're at that 3.0 level, or you're still at that 2.5 level, but you've been around the sport for longer, and you're watching the sport more at the professional level, and you're playing with some people that are 3.0 or 3.5. And you're starting to understand, okay, this is what I have to do with my game to really improve. And okay, now I'm noticing, whether it's my footwork or my take back of the racket or, my decision making or my mental game. I'm starting to understand sort of the differences between tennis players and understand what I have to do. So that really is that step two. And step three is we go from, again, step one was unconscious incompetence, step two being conscious incompetence. Step three, now we're going to conscious competence. So now, again, we're still aware of the processes, and these could be more specific processes, like, something like technique. We're really aware and conscious of our technique in a moment, and now we're more competent. Now we've raised our game to that next level. But we're still thinking about, our process, thinking about, our technique in these different areas. And then step four is unconscious competence. And really the idea here is that at this point, we don't have to think about every single detail. We can act a little bit more instinctively. We can trust ourselves more. We're not hopefully second guessing ourselves. And I think people actually will go back and forth between the stages, that they don't necessarily stay in one stage forever. Maybe you reach that fourth stage and then you're having an issue with your backhand, and you start to really second guess the technique or your form with your backhand. So you sort of in that mode have regressed back to that third stage. But the reason I bring it up, and hopefully everyone followed along with that. I know I tried to make that clear with those different stages. The reason I bring that up is because, bringing that back to what you're talking about with Phil Stutz and the tools, the idea is that we're never done applying the tools. Where I think with mastery, it's different. It's the idea is that we've gotten to a point where some of the tools have become more instinctual, and more instinctive. Something like the in-between points routine doesn't have to be thought about or reminded all the time, right? It just becomes a part of what we do, of who we are, right? That's how I spend time in between points, rather than it being something that we have to consciously keep thinking about. It's something that, it comes a little bit easier to us. It's something that is just sort of how we do things. So anyways, just wanted to bring up that idea, and I think, it can be something that, we want to get to that point where things are a little bit more instinctive. We don't have to think about every detail. Maybe it's a little bit easier to get into flow. But I think continuing to use some of these skills and maybe developing them to that next level makes it a lot easier to continue making progress.
One of the issues, perhaps, with the book, The Tools, was maybe how they were presenting the tools to begin with, which seemed to be more use it in this situation, right? Which would then somewhat imply that it's almost a fix type of thing. Which then, when they presented sort of the last tool of you're probably not going to use the tools all the time, and we need to establish willpower and so forth and make it a part of your life. I think if it had been approached more from the perspective of these are habits that we want to develop, similar to a between point routine. A between point routine certainly has an objective for us. And there are lots of strategies and habits and systems that we want to ingrain. So I think it's really important about how we initially conceive of what we're doing in our mental training, and that we go into it with this thought process of I'm looking to almost redesign my lifestyle in order to become this great player that I want to be, to become this great person that I want to be, rather than I'm looking for some techniques to deal with nerves, or I'm looking for some techniques to help my confidence. Of course, along the way, we'll use that. But the goal here is really to learn how to live your tennis life better so that you can connect with your overall purpose of, hopefully becoming a great player. And certainly, discipline is a part of that. Now, sometimes I think the word discipline, Josh, gets a bad rap. People hear discipline and they don't want that, or that sounds hard. And I remember reading the book Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, two former Navy SEALs. And they have a chapter in there, and I think they maybe even wrote a small little book called this later, but that discipline equals freedom. Now, it sounds weird, right? Discipline, freedom, they sound like kind of contrary concepts. But the whole idea is when you have discipline in your life and you have very specific habits and systems and you execute on those, you actually give yourself more time. Because people who, who maybe don't have great discipline will say, well, I'll do that later. Or I'll do that when I have time. And it never works out that they do have time, or they won't do it later. And so by being disciplined, you get more things done, you have more time to yourself. And you can live a more purposeful life. So, I'd like to try to sell discipline here as a positive thing. Is it hard, maybe at first, to get some of these behavior changes in? But then we can come back to the books like Atomic Habits and Tiny Habits. So, what's common between those two titles? We're starting off really small, right? Almost like stupid small, impossible to fail. Small. Can you meditate for a minute? Kind of small. Or take one breath? Kind of small. So that you can begin to install the new habit, install the new system in what you do. One of the tennis academies that I work with, in order to help players install their between points routine, we actually don't start with the full between points routine. We just start with taking a few breaths. And get them used to that. And then after that, we get them used to adding body language, how they walk around the court to that. Then we begin to talk about what's the right way to speak to yourself between points. And we get into the coach's voice and using your name, things like that. Then we add in a little bit of visualization. And this occurs over the course of several months. So that they get some practice with these little parts of the routine. Because if you think about it, breathing, your body language, your self-talk, adding in some visualization or intention, those are the basic tools that go into a routine. And you now it's how do you sequence those and how do you order those and so forth. So I think when we begin to learn these things this way, then we can go through that those learning stages you mentioned, Josh. I agree with you. That there probably is going to be some oscillation between conscious competence and unconscious competence. And you feel that in your strokes, There might be some days where forehand is just flowing, and other days where, there's something going on here. I need to pay a little bit more attention to it. But the whole goal is to try to overlearn these things to the point that under pressure, you have complete trust and recall of what you're trying to do. And the more that we look at mental skills training and physical training and even strength training as lifestyle habits, lifestyle management, this is a way of living versus just issue resolution and immediate gratification and trying to reach some sort of outcome goal, then the more success we can have with these new skills, habits, systems.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, trying to really connect to that deeper purpose and make this more about something longer term and bigger picture rather than this just being about, let's overcome this one obstacle or barrier that we're going through right now. And I also think it makes sense. It makes sense that that's often where somebody starts that journey. Something is holding them back. Something is, a key challenge that they're having in that moment. But can we start to look beyond that and understand that we're trying to really build skills for you as a player, as a tennis player overall, and hopefully these same skills you can use in other areas of life, right? Whether it's a young athlete who's able to use these same sorts of skills in school, or someone who's able to use these skills in their workplace or in their relationships or whatever it is. But can we get to a point where it doesn't just become about it's no longer about just the issue itself or the challenge that maybe brought you there in the first place, but it's about, really that mastery process and being the best that you can be and continuing to get better and better. And there's no end to that process, right? There is, we can become more and more enlightened, but is there, as tennis players, do we ever fully reach enlightenment? I don't think so. Maybe, maybe
It's
an
like, yeah, do
argument
we
could be
ever reach
made.
mastery, right? I mean, there's
Right,
always new
right.
levels, right? The ladder never ends.
And that, to me, that's kind of the point, right? That's kind of the, it's not the point of, okay, it's like this checklist and okay, we reach this and then we can move on and act however we want. And that sort of goes against everything that led us there in the first place, right? The point is that we can continue to raise the bar. There's always more levels on that ladder, and we can keep, we can keep going with it. And I think that's really important when we think about this. It's that, we want to keep moving forward because and I think that it also it keeps it exciting. Tennis is a lifetime sport. People will play up till their 70s, 80s, 90s. There are tennis players in their hundreds, and I think it's pretty cool that there's age groups, and people can play tournaments and get a ranking and find peers that are their age group as well. And this is a sport where you really can play as long as you can, as long as you want to, as long as your body allows. And maybe you've reached a certain level earlier in life, and now mastery at the age that you're at right now, or that the level, or the sort of the environment that you're at right now looks a little bit different, and that's okay too. But how can you find mastery with your own circumstances? How can you be the best player that you can be, considering, your situation? And I think that's really what this is about as well. How can you, make the best of all that and really feel like you're doing everything that you can do to reach your goals, to be the best player that you can be, to really connect to that deeper purpose that you have.
Yeah, so this is, I think, a really important topic, Josh, and I appreciate that conversation around this, and I hope that others do as well. You're right. I think people will come to mental training initially with some sort of thing that they're looking to resolve. The majority, some come to us just with the sort of the mental training piece, but then I think part of our job is to help them shift in that and get them into more of the developing great systems in their lives, helping them understand their own process and recipe for doing this in the longer term, and helping them get through the why piece. I know that that's a big part of my process, and I'm sure it is a big part of yours. So, thanks for having this discussion. I really appreciate it. Thought it was really great. as well as I hope all of you appreciated it. And of course, thank you for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. You can also use the Twitter hashtag tennisiq. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. And you can also check us out on Instagram. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiq/membership, where you can learn more about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.